You know, oh, it's the start of something, hopefully.
This is the Garibaldi Gazette, a podcast about two-time European champions Nottingham Forest. On this episode, Forest win a game convincingly. Morgan Gibbs White, that's it, that's the subtitle. Spurs up next, accounts latest, and the player we wish we'd seen. So grateful to have a wood in the forest, this is the Garibaldi Gazette. Oh, it's nice to be talking to you on this Wednesday morning for us, listener, basking in the glow as we are of that magnificent victory at the world-famous City Ground against Fulham on Tuesday night. It's me, Matt, and back with three of my Forest friends. Hello, Ashraf Ali.
Hello, everyone. I'd just like to kick things off by reading a statement. I said a few things in our last episode, and I just need to open the notes app on my phone for this apology. Where do I begin? Let's start with this. I'm sorry. This is a first for me because I've never made a mistake before. I'm surrounded by good people and I believe I make good decisions, but I am a human being. I can be wrong. On the 20th of March this year, in episode 10 of the Garibaldi Gazette podcast, I made some comments about Morgan Gibbs-White. I questioned his numbers. I doubted him slightly. I was wrong. I was misguided by shock and awe as portrayed in the video, and I still am. I do this shit every Wednesday. I've made a 45-minute podcast every week of my life since January 2024. One may understand that it's easy to get caught up in the moment without fully weighing the possible ramifications. I'm often reminded of how big of a reach I truly have, and with great power comes great responsibility. For the first time in my life, I'm regretful to say I handled that power incorrectly. It won't happen again. I love everyone. I believe in everyone. I'm out here. And so to help this never happen again to anyone else in the world, I leave you with this question to ponder before saying anything silly. Hey, baby, do you know what he's worth? Morgan Gibbs-White is the best on earth. Peace. Hashtag MGW gang for life.
Appreciate the apology, but consider this a final warning. If there's anything else even mildly negative about our superstar, then you will be in big trouble. Nick Miller, follow that.
I've got nothing to apologise for. I've never been wrong in my life, so it's not really going to be a problem for me.
fair. Steve Wright's back with us too. Steve, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. Still riding the wave of last night. Rare trip to the City Ground for me, and if you want to pay for me to keep going, to keep this going, then feel free to do so.
Well, we definitely had value for money for our ticket, that's for sure. And that's where we're going to start today. A whirlwind of a night at the City Ground on Tuesday, then with Forest playing the hits of the past few years and creating another memorable evening whilst earning a hugely significant victory. Me and Steve were both there, as was David Marples. Let's get a word from him now.
If the first half performance against Fulham was pure sexy liquid football, the second half was like lugging a fridge up Snowdon with an albatross around the neck. Nonetheless, a huge win. It's important not to get too carried away and resort to hyperbole on nights like this, so I'll leave you with some facts. Nottingham Forest are the greatest team you'll ever see. Nottingham Forest are magic. My love for Morgan Gibbs-White is deep and true.
I wanted to kick off, Steve, with something nice about Forza Garibaldi and that pre-match display, because I don't think we've taken it for granted, but having been going to Forest for 30 plus years now, the atmosphere that's been generated over the last couple of years has been unlike anything we've seen before, and they played a massive part in it. And that pre-match tifo really got the hair standing up on the back of my neck and the goosebumps. I can't imagine what it did for Morgan Gibbs-White, but it's something we should be really proud of, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I love everything that they do, I have to admit. I love the attention to detail as well in what they do. It's incredible that they hit the right notes so well with everything. But yeah, I mean, you could see that Gibbs White has acknowledged that display himself, hasn't he? And you can imagine what it must have felt like to come out. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk, I guess, recently about other people starting to recognize just what a talent he is, and kind of hope that he maybe stay off people's radar for a little bit longer. But he seems to be starting to attract attention from the really significant clubs, you know, not the ones around us, the ones way off in the upper echelons of the league. And, you know, it's well-deserved. I mean, last night he was outstanding. I mean, it was a great team performance, especially for, I mean, the first half was just sensational, really. I didn't quite know where it had come from, especially after the sort of slightly negative vibes I'd been receiving from all quarters after the Palace game. But yeah, he was just the centre of it all, wasn't he? He just drove that performance on from start to finish. It was brilliant.
Speaks to his character, right, Arsha? Because the whole game was essentially framed around him from that pre-match moment. And I'm sure there are many players who would have shriveled at that, but he embraced it. And that's the kind of guy and footballer that he seems to be.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it on TV and there was a nice framing of him sort of looking at the TIFO, and, you know, you could tell, like, it wasn't one of those where you sort of, you know, you sort of look and you feel a bit embarrassed. He was looking into it. There was a focus in his eyes. He looked like, you know, that something was sort of about to kind of happen and it was going to help him sort of step up. But that performance last night kind of felt like a lot of that had come out of the second half of Palace. Like, he was doing that in the second half, but he was probably the kind of bright spark in that game, you know, and obviously he dropped much deeper in a sort of strange role, you know, but his passing and all that kind of vision and all that was still intact, even though he was deeper. So it felt like the kind of, you know, genesis of that kind of performance last night started in the second half. But what can you say? Like, I don't understand how you do. Like David Marple said, seeing him receive the ball in a tight area, you're just preconditioned now. You know he's going to get out of it. Like, he'll be swarmed by three players and you just know he can drop the shoulder and just wriggle out of those situations. And some of those passes last night were absolutely filthy. Outside of the boot through ball, just stop football now. Just stop it.
He was glorious, Nick, but there were 10 other players who started the game as well. And this was a victory for those who like square pegs in square holes or round pegs in round holes, depending on your square and your peg, I suppose. But what I'm trying to say is that Nuno picked the right team for this match, I would think.
Yeah, this is a no negative of his own today, but it's slightly frustrating that he didn't just do that in previous games. But, you know, that's not concentrating that. But yeah, it's kind of evidence of kind of what we knew, really, that there's a genuine, in the attacking part of the field anyway, there's a genuinely really good team in there somewhere. You know, there's a, you could debate about who else should play in central defence and, you know, who the midfield two should be. But with the players available at the moment, certainly, there's no kind of real debate about what the front four should be, and they showed last night that they're brilliant, not only, you know, attacking in a sort of standard way, but on counter-attacks as well, which we kind of knew. And we're now getting to the point where, well, I don't know, we might be past the point where when Taiwo Awoniyi's fit, I mean, who's the first choice striker now? I mean, it was kind of up until a few weeks ago probably unthinkable to even suggest that, you know, anyone but him should be there. And the points at which they're both fit have been relatively few so far, but it's almost the kind of ideal scenario. I mean, we've talked a lot before about the fact that one, you can't really play 90 minutes, but this is, you know, play one of them for 60 minutes, play the other one for half an hour. It's bodes well, really, for the future. Getting ahead of myself, and we should be just reveling in last night, I suppose. But yeah, everything can be quite overcomplicated, but if you just pick the best players in the positions that they are best in, then see what happens.
We'll come on to Chris Wood shortly, but I wanted to talk a bit about Callum Hudson-Odoi, Steve, because for obvious reasons, we've spoken a lot about what Forest have done in the transfer market and the many misses that have gone with the few hits. But you've got to put Hudson-Odoi in the latter category, right? 5 goals for him this season. They've all come in the Premier League, and Nick's pals at The Athletic tweeting that he got 4 goals in 72 games for Chelsea. He's got 5 in 22 for Forest. And for the money that Forest paid for him, he's been an absolute steal. And also, he's managed to continue his perform or actually improve on it since Steve Cooper left. Obviously, he was a Steve Cooper guy from the England under 17 World Cup, but it looks like Forest have got a bargain with Hudson-Odoi.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess there's a limit to how many of these that you can actually try to do in one go, because obviously there were risks associated with Hudson-Odoi, and that's why we got him for such a bargain price. But within, you know, a balanced sort of approach to your recruitment and to your squad building, this type of move is absolutely a central thing to a team like Forest. You know, you've got to be able to maximise your resources, and that means occasionally taking a risk on somebody who's maybe, you know, not at the heights that they're previously known for, are available for a bit of a bargain price, and then give them the opportunity to kind of rebuild within your team. And I think you see that over the course of the season so far, don't you, with Hudson-Odoi. It felt early doors that he was conscious that he'd had injuries, that he was wary of his body and whether or not he'd be able to go full pelt every game. You know, you've got that sense that he was holding back at times, a little bit uncertain. And then as the games have gone on, you can see his confidence in his body rising. And he now looks like the player that everybody kind of hoped he was going to be. And people must be noticing that for him as well, that he's, you know, he's on his way back to being a very, very strong Premier League player at the very least. And who knows what his ceiling becomes as that confidence continues to grow. Occasionally, I think you sometimes think, could you just push on that little bit more and take somebody on when he maybe doesn't quite go past them? And you think, you know, if he gets that, you know, what was his sort of position before? He was one of the best sort of players in the country, and people were really picturing him as having, you know, a really, really high ceiling. Where's that going to land now? Because if we can keep him going like this, he can get back right the way back to where he was before.
You kind of mentioned the sort of slight frustrations sometimes with him. He's a very kind of plan A winger. He's incredibly reluctant to go on the outside. He always cuts in on the right foot to the point where it is in some ways quite a predictable player. But it's like he's a sort of slightly budget right-footed Ian Robin, in that when plan A goes well, then there's not really much need for plan B, really. He's so good at that. As I think all of his goals for Forest have been kind of that similar thing, just coming in from the left in some description, obviously slightly different last night, and then sort of playing that shot into the sort of far corner. So, yeah, I mean, that may be what injuries is one of the reasons why he didn't quite make it at Chelsea. One of the other reasons might be that he is a tiny bit predictable, but there's a difference between, you know, predicting what someone's going to do and stopping them, and people just haven't really been able to stop him that much.
Who else does that type of thing? Kind of makes me think of Antony. How many Hudson-Odois? 28 Hudson-Odois for an Antony? That seems like pretty good value there.
And Hudson-Odoi seems actually quite a nice bloke.
Yeah, nice
Antony,
guy with
so,
it.
You know.
Yeah, big difference there. I watched Hudson-Odoi come through the under-18s and 21s at Chelsea into the first team. And yeah, so rueful when he did his Achilles against Burnley. And they made him walk off the pitch, and you could just see, like, this is going to make this take a lot longer to recover from. Just put him on a stretcher. But anyway, he wouldn't have come to us, maybe, if that hadn't happened. So never mind. We've got to talk about Chris Wood, Arsha, because my goodness me. I mean, you can say what on earth was Bernd Leno doing for the goal, just kind of standing there going, oop, that'll be the ball going past me into the net then. But Chris Wood, 8 goals in his last 9 Premier League games. He's surely going to get a new contract from Forest. And he might be the deciding factor in whether we go down or not. His goals have been absolutely critical.
The sort of parting gift from Steve Cooper. The kind of gift that we didn't understand. It's like a wise man giving you something. It's like, you know, I'm going to give you this. It's not what you want, but it's what you need. And that's exactly what he's become. Like, it's just insane. And that just kind of culminates in the confidence to try a shot like that, you know, to spot that gap and then, you know, to be able to get it in there. I mean, he definitely, I think every single last word has been eaten now. Surely there's nothing left on the table. 15 million, absolute bargain, considering what's going on, you know, in terms of strikers in the Premier League. It feels like a weird season. It seems like there's kind of like Erling Haaland's kind of having some kind of weird regression where he's getting called a League Two player by Roy Keane, you know, and Ivan Toney's come back and he's not really doing anything yet. And, you know, there isn't really like a kind of standout striker. And well, it seems to be him at the moment, you know, long may it continue. And I hope we do give him a new contract. Hopefully, slightly lesser terms if reports are to be believed, but definitely worth it. And I hope he, yeah, he's. I mean, that he's a great option. He's a great option to have. Is he your first guy? I don't know. You know, let's stay in the Premier League first, then we can sort of solve that later. But definitely keep.
I wonder if Matt Turner has earned himself a bit more love from Forest fans. Here's Dom Smith of the London Evening Standard, who was at the game for Fulham. Matt Turner rightly booked for getting up off the Forest bench and kicking a ball back in play so Fulham couldn't restart play quickly. Descent in the Premier League at an all-time high. Forest fans liked him shouting F off after the booking. Pretty depressing stuff. Might be if you don't support Forest, Nick, but I thought it was tremendous fun.
Did you intend to read that out in a Richard Keys voice? Because
yes.
It kind of, yeah, you did. Okay, good, right. Yeah. Just double checking that. Are we being too harsh to say that's the best thing he's done for Forest?
I thought that, and then I thought about Chelsea away when actually he played really well.
To be fair, he's made a few kind of decent saves in among all the kind of flappy errors. But yeah, enormously enjoyable. It's kind of watching on TV, it was one of those kind of moments where the camera cut to the touchline and it was like, what's he doing there? I thought, why is the referee to... Oh, okay, right, great, excellent. Yeah, just enormously enjoyable wrestling from the great man.
So it's 3-0 at halftime. Marco Silva's made a triple substitution just past half an hour in. Really enjoyable to see former Derby County loanee Harry Wilson volley a water bottle the length of the pitch in disgust after his withdrawal. But I think we kind of knew, didn't we, Steve, that the second half wasn't going to follow the pattern of the first. And actually, those substitutions changed things quite a bit for Fulham. And as soon as they got a corner in the second half, you thought, I wonder what's going to happen here then. And lo and behold, tossing nods one in, which is inevitable. But Forrest did manage to repel them from there on, at least.
I think that was the thing. I think it showed the importance of that third goal. And to be fair, the first half, it could have been more than three. But I think if it had been two, then that would have been panic stations when that goal went in for Fulham. But actually, with having that extra little buffer of the couple of goals, everybody just sort of said, okay, calm, let's not lose sight of where we are. And I thought the defending, it was a very different experience, second half. First half was just all, wow, what's going on? This is amazing. Second half was very much nervier. I thought you saw what a good team they can be going forward. So, I mean, some of their attacking play was superb. I particularly liked Robinson at left back. I thought he was terrific. But we were organised. We were looking out for each other. We were very much a team. I got a lot of messages on Saturday saying, we've got some talent, but we're just not a team anymore. I didn't feel like that last night at all. We felt like a team. The celebrating was all together. And we put Morgan Gibbs-White up on the TIFO, but that didn't sort of make everybody think, oh, they only care about him. This was a very much a team performance. And I thought we defended as a team really well. Every time a ball went into the box, I thought the two fullbacks were really good last night. But when the ball did go into the box, there was always a Yates or a Danilo in there. I mean, Danilo's a bundle of energy. That midfield was a very different kind of combination to what we've seen more recently. And they just stuck at the task. And, the longer and longer the game went on, the more you started to feel that actually we've got this covered. We're really set up for this game. And I think the everybody to a man, and the keeper as well. I mean, we've had our problems with goalkeeping, but the keeper made a couple of great saves, took a couple of crosses as well when they needed him to. So a really good performance in two very different ways.
Yeah, Danilo in April hits different, as somebody younger than me might say. We're not digging out Matt Turner here, Arsha, but it does make a massive difference, doesn't it? When you've got a goalkeeper who not only is capable of sort of basic competency in making good saves, but you can clearly see that the players in front of him have faith that he's going to do his job, and then that makes everything easier.
And there's communication. There's like real strong communication. And obviously this will only get picked up if you're watching it on the TV a lot of the times, when they sort of really zoom in and, just little routine things are sort of being... talked about between them and praised and whatever. But yeah, he has done really well. He hasn't looked anything like that kind of player that came and joined Newcastle, was, Rafa's first signing, whatever, and looked completely shocked. It just, what a difference it makes, on some of those. I know we're still conceding from, set pieces, but, like Steve said, there were more than, a couple of occasions where he came and, really a kind of strong catch of the ball instead of a punch, which is weird because I saw them sort of practicing. I remember seeing sort of Matt Turner practicing punching at the start of the game, you know, in their warm-ups. And I'm just like, he was just relentlessly practicing it. And you're just like, no, why aren't you practicing catching? Like, yeah, okay, yeah, great. That was a punch to the halfway line. But remember, there'll be players there, you know, in the game, you know, there'll be players. So maybe catch it. But anyway, that wasn't, we weren't supposed to dig Matt Turner. I can't resist. I can't help myself. I need help. Don't like him.
Just think of the shit out and yellow card. Gotcha.
Yeah, that should have been upgraded to a red, to be fair.
Nick, is there anyone else you want to single out for praise? I particularly enjoyed from my vantage point where Steve was in the upper Bridgeford watching Murillo just hit 40, 50-yard passes into people. One of those where you kind of think, I'm going to enjoy this now because we're probably not going to see it for that much longer.
Yeah, we are into that kind of territory with a few players. I mean, you know, maybe Gibbs White is one of them. Murillo certainly is. It's a given that Murillo was brilliant. Almost don't have to kind of mention it too much. I would like to, well, again, it's a long-standing thing for me. Ryan Yates, obviously, we kind of know he's not brilliant technically. He gave the ball away sort of carelessly a couple of times, but he's just so enjoyable how much and how obviously the opposition players hate him and the opposition fans as well. More than at two or three occasions this season, I've had fans, mates of mine who are fans of teams we've played, saying things along the lines of that he is a horrible little bastard, and it's great. It's absolutely wonderful. You wouldn't to go against the song. You wouldn't want 11 of him in your team, but my God, having one of them is great.
And you can't, Steve, sort of quantify the importance of having a local lad, if that even is a big thing in the team. But having somebody who supporters connect with and who can, I guess, fill in the other players about, you know, what certain games mean or what the club means, that is something, right? That does carry some weight in a football team.
It does for me. It doesn't feel like it does for everybody. Not the way that Ryan Yates gets kind of, you know, he seems to be a real divider of fans.
He's the Ben Osborne of 2024, basically.
Who wants him in there? But yeah, I mean, I absolutely, you know, that is football for me. You know, it's, you know, they are representing Nottingham Forest, and you need, I get that it's now a global game and there are people that, you know, come in from all around the world, and it is amazing to see Murillo. You know, he's just a joy to watch. But there's a lot of mediocrity that also travels around the world playing football. And, you know, I'd much rather see a homegrown talent, a guy who's been at the club since he was 8 years old, playing than just some kind of random guy brought in from around the world. If you can pick out the real top talent, great. But otherwise, you want that core, don't you, of players that you can connect to and players that you feel like you've had a shared journey with, and they, you know, they've grown with Nottingham Forest, and Nottingham Forest has therefore grown because of them. And that stuff, that all that sentimental stuff that people kind of no longer really want to connect with because it's a money game and it's all business, that's what really drives the whole thing for me.
Yeah, the only player in the matchday squad for the Fulham game who was part of the side that got promoted. All right, well, Fulham was glorious, Crystal Palace less so. We'll have a quick reflection on that next. Before Tuesday, Forest could only manage a draw against Crystal Palace at the world famous on Saturday. Our friend David Marples was there. He sent us this voice note.
The big takeaway? I have no doubt that Singare is a very good player, but it's just not happened, and it's still not happening for him. I wish him zero ill will, and I'm certain he is an excellent footballer. But perhaps there is a big lesson for us to beware the pizza graph and pie chart depicting how amazing, transformational, and exciting a new signing is going to be. There are so many variables involved in whether a signing will work out, especially one from a different league and country. So many moving parts and factors at play, and of course, we all get a bit giddy about big signings. But at the same time, we should all remember that a pizza graph and pie chart telling us a midfielder is the best in Europe at disrupting play is quite different from seeing a midfielder actually play football in the flesh and making an informed judgment. A lesson to us all. The game? Well, somehow we scraped ourselves out of the bottom three with a, shall we say, varied performance. First half not so good, second half better. But underlying it all was a sense of chaos. Ilanga briefly popping up in a number 10 role. Reina and Morgan on the pitch together, with Morgan a bit deeper. As for Morgan Gibbs-White, what a technically accomplished footballer he is. It gives me joy just watching him receive the ball in a tight space and squirming it and himself away from a congested area. I found myself, or my wildest fantasy did, imagining playing five-a-side against him, then conceiving the absolute despair of trying to get near the ball as he nonchalantly bounces off another ball off the wall and ambles past me while I sit on the floor in a pit of despair. Him smiling his impish and winning grin as he skips away again and again and again. Worth it just to be in close proximity to his grin, to be fair. Another piping hot take. We are struggling creatively. Our last two goals consist of Morgan sprinkling a magic cross to Chris Wood, who conjures up a deft touch to stick the ball in the bag. This, or Callum Hudson-Odoi running very, very, very fast down the left before cutting inside and shooting, appear to be the only occasions on which we look close to scoring a goal. The stats suggest Elanga is a goal threat too, but this has to be countered by prolonged moments of watching Elanga either run very fast into an offside position or standing still staring into space while a wonderful through ball sails over the fence for him to run onto. Nuno's solution to this was to, at least on Saturday, chuck all our forward players on the pitch at the same time. Not wholly against this, but some variety and cohesion would be most welcome. At some stage of the second half, results elsewhere were not great. Then we equalised, and by the end, results elsewhere looked decent, and somehow we were out of the dreaded zone after a very middling performance. One suspects this is how it will play out over the next eight games. More twisty and turny than a very big twisty and turny thing. Chucking some late winners, very late concessions, very surprising results, and some extremely VAR drama and controversy, and we have ourselves a very spicy run-in. It is entirely plausible that a team may stay up with as little as 30 points, but which team that may be, that's about as difficult to second guess who Nuno will decide to play in the field and on the wing for the next game. All we can do is enjoy it. No, of course not. A ridiculous suggestion. Nobody can possibly enjoy such scenarios, mad to even consider it. No, all we can do is tolerate whatever weirdness is chucked in our general direction. Embrace it even, or chuck it away. I have no idea. None. Zero.
Archie, you were also in attendance. What were your thoughts coming away from the City Ground at 5 p.m?
Don't really want to dwell on it, you know, especially after last night. Like, I know you've just set up that question and I've completely, like, smashed it away. But what I will say is that I watched the game with the Punjabi Forest lads, and they were a great company. It sort of happened randomly. I ended up taking one of their guys' seats. So it was nice to see them. It was nice to see my old shopkeeper from my youth, someone who, I've spoken about this before on other podcasts, but someone who got me into Forest, Spam, a guy called Spam, who was a massive Forest fan. And once I went into his shop wearing a Manchester United shirt when I was like 9 or 10 or something, and he screamed me out of the shop. He was like, "What are you doing? You should support your local teams." And those were the kind of seeds as well in there. So it was lovely to see him. But I mean, the one thing I will say, and I know we're trying to keep this as a positive one because, God, man, they're few and far between. But I'll bring up Sangare. Now, I know there's going to be a lot of people who, you know, will be like, what is he talking about? You know, chatting absolute nonsense here. But that booing, and, you know, at halftime, I was sat sort of right in line with the tunnel. I mean, yeah, he struggled. He did. But the way it was handled by our fans, like, you know, you think it was all his fault, like, that we're down here. It was all because of him. And just the vitriol that was poured right into his face. There were so many fans around who were, shouting, "Oh, you know, you're shit," you know, and all that, right in his face. And I just saw this glimmer in his face of vulnerability. And I just thought, no, man, come on. You can't do that. That's too much. Like, you know, when I haven't reached the level yet where I just feel sorry for him, you know, like we got to, with Matt Turner, that's definitely a thing. You know, that's where my relationship with him as a fan kind of ended. But with Sangare, it's different. I don't feel like I am ready to write him off yet, you know, because we have seen glimpses of it. That's why, you know, yes, he is struggling with the speed of the game. Absolutely. He is. But how does that help? You know, and I know we're having a Ryan Yates loving, and rightly so. Because, you know, as Adam Summerton said on the commentary yesterday, he is the fan on the pitch. That's quite pithy. But he publicly dug him out on the pitch as well during that game. And there were a lot of fans who reacted to that. So I didn't think that helps either. As a pairing, those two, no, absolutely not. That's a Nuno, no. Those two do not work together as a pairing on the pitch. Now, as a pairing off the pitch, I'm thinking, yeah, maybe there's something there. Because if you give Sangare a proper pre-season, which he didn't have coming in, he was the last signing, you know, all the big light show, all that stuff. He was the last guy through the door. And it's been all jumbled up with the AFCON and all that kind of stuff. But if you give him, especially if we're a Premier League team, if you give him a proper pre-season and you pair him up with someone like Ryan Yates, you know, get them in training together, get Ryan Yates, get it so it's always Sangare opposite Ryan Yates. Because if you can't get up to speed with an attack dog like Ryan Yates, absolutely destroying you in training and really getting you used to the kind of physical hustle of the Premier League, then nothing will. And then it's time to start going, oh yeah, maybe that was a huge bust. But I didn't like that. I didn't like that everybody jumped on him, you know, and the way it was handled as well. Only from a small section of fans right above the tunnel. They're the ones who always seem to shout the loudest and really get in players' faces. And it's, you know, when they're getting in the faces of the opposition, we're fine with it. But with our players, man, come on, you can't do that.
Yeah, well said. This is a guy who's played 14 times for Forest, only 90 minutes in four of them. And he's gone from a top team in a weak league to one of the bottom teams in a strong one. So it's not going to happen overnight for him. All right, that was Crystal Palace. We have a charity partner who you can donate to if you're able. They're called Hope Nottingham. They offer a food bank service for those in need in Notts. Here's Nigel Adams from the charity to tell us more.
Hope Nottingham runs a network of 14 community hubs and food banks across the Nottingham area, everywhere from Stapleford across to Netherfield. In the last year, we've given out 25,000 food parcels for people that are struggling with all kinds of difficulty due to cost of living, due to unemployment, due to homelessness, all sorts of different issues. But we're only able to do that because we get massive, wonderful support from so many people. And Nottingham Forest, actually, in recent years, have been really helpful to us. We've done a number of food bank collections at the ground through Nottingham Forest. And the massive support that we get across the city, we're able to bring hope to hundreds of people.
To donate, visit localgiving.org/hopenotstgg. We'll provide a link to that in the show notes too. Steve, you provide lots of valuable insight into what happens on the pitch, but also we've got you here because you are a top-level financial expert in terms of the Garibaldi Gazette family, at the very least. In terms of the accounts, basically Forest is spending too much money and need to spend less money. Would that be a deeply analytical analysis of it?
Yeah, it's a really tricky one, isn't it? Because, I mean, I don't want to be all doom and gloomy because I do get accused of such things when I start talking about the finances. But I kind of very much feel that transparency is the watchword rather than kind of, you know, misery. It's not about trying to say, oh, the world's wrong and we need to do things differently necessarily. It's just about saying, let's understand where we are and what that means potentially in the future. And then at least we've all got our eyes open and we can kind of go forward. But I mean, you look at the accounts and we got 10 times as much TV money last year as we got in the Championship, but virtually all of it went on wages. So, you know, they kind of talk about the richest game in the world when you're in that playoff final and, you know, it's all going to be sort of riches and fabulous. But in reality, it's a cost increase is what you're really dealing with. You're having to try to step up to this whole new level and all that new money just gets absorbed. And then you've got to spend more and more kind of all the time. So it does mean that, I said this when I looked at the original Championship accounts, you know, the scale is so much bigger now that the risk inevitably is bigger with it. And you just have to be conscious of that. So I think it sort of said at the end of the year, we'd got the £35 million loan from a UK lender, but that basically is secured against all of our assets. So that's the training ground, the academy and everything. And then it said after the balance sheet date, we'd extended that by another £10 million. So we've got £45 million that we have to pay back, or we lose everything, you know, the infrastructure of the club effectively. So I think you just need to be aware of these sorts of things, we want to be ambitious. We want constantly more and more. And obviously everybody's kind of at the moment playing this sort of game between us and the Premier League of why can't we just do what we like? But I think we've got to be aware that all of that comes with a risk. And yes, we can push it so far, but let's, all these rules and things, however imperfect we might feel they are, they're there to try to give some semblance of security and just awareness that it's not all money in. A lot of it is money out.
Is it idealistic of me, Nick, to think that a natural endpoint for this might be that players start having to accept lower wages rather than just trying to squeeze supporters for a few extra quid, because that's not going to be sustainable for too much longer?
It's a, I would say, an adorable point of view. It's very optimistic, I think, because it's not, that sort of thing would require a sort of across the board recognition, because it's all very well one club or one group of players or whoever saying, well, okay, we're not going to pay as much wages or accept as many wages, but the clubs that are willing to pay more wages will just kind of raise the level, raise the expectations for everyone else. So yeah, I mean, it does feel like, and we kind of saw from Leicester's accounts as well that came out this week, that which you kind of look at those and you think, oh, actually Forest might be relatively sensibly run compared to these guys. It is out of control. I don't know how you kind of you stop that, how you kind of bring wages down without some kind of across the board agreement to bring everything down. So Forest could, you know, could well just make a unilateral decision. We're not paying those kind of wages, but that requires a very, very sort of careful, like, transfer policy. For example, you have to, generally speaking, you're buying a lot of younger players, as you've witnessed firsthand, Matt, buying a load of young players and sticking them in the team at the same time doesn't necessarily work, as Chelsea have tried. So yeah, it's incredibly difficult, isn't it? It's incredibly easy to, when you're in a Forest position, to think, well, okay, well, we need to stay in the Premier League, so we need someone with a bit of experience, so, and that requires higher wages. So yeah, it's, in an ideal world, obviously we'd be paying less, but it's from my kind of very layman's understanding of it anyway, it's very difficult to get out from that.
I think the bit that frustrates me about Forest, and this is a really, again, it's a difficult area to go into, because it doesn't suddenly make you good not to do this, but our answer is always more money. You know, we did it in the Championship. We tried it for a year. We didn't go up. So we threw some more money at it and tried again. And we do the same thing now. And I think our wage bill was the 11th highest last year in the league. So we threw a lot at it. I mean, you look at, and I'm always wary of making comparisons, because everybody thinks that you think that's a direct mapping and we should now do exactly what these people over there did. But Brighton posted £122 million profit last year. They made a profit the year before as well. That included the McAllister transfer, but it didn't include Casado. So that's another £100 million sale that came into this year. And people say, well, Tony Bloom's spent a fortune doing that. And he has spent a fortune. He's, you know, there's a lot of loans on Brighton's balance sheet that are to Tony Bloom. But he also built a stadium and gave them a state-of-the-art training facility as well. So he hasn't just thrown it on the pitch. The football model is very clear. It works. And he's invested heavily in the infrastructure, so that whatever happens to him next, that club is in a much better position than it was when Tony Bloom arrived. Now, we can say, oh yeah, let's be cleverer with our resources. It doesn't mean that we'll suddenly become successful. We might go down for doing that and not quite getting it right. But you've got to have some kind of approach. And the other thing that Tony Bloom does is he appoints experts to run his football club, and then he lets them get on with it. And they do. And we just feel erratic and without that plan, which means that we're always having to pay extra money to make up for the mistakes that we made, Jonjo Shelvey. You know, there's always something like that in our mix, and we wouldn't get every transfer right, even if we had a clear sort of policy around that. But maybe we'd get more for what we spent than we currently get. And it just feels like we're wasteful, we're incoherent in what we do, and that we could make gains by doing things better rather than arguing that we need more money and, you know, so that we can spend more.
I'm holding out hope, though, on the recruitment side, seeing that Sirianis, he might have been promoted to sort of technical director in terms of, like, overseeing recruitment over all the Maranakis clubs. And obviously in the chain of that, you know, we are at the top of that. So it's been a nice about face with him you can sort of see that, oh, okay, he has sort of realized he's made a bit of a mistake here. You know, they got him in, the signings he made, they thought, you know, were complete busts. Turns out they're not. How much do we miss Mangala now? You know, quite a lot. Taiwo, obviously, if we can keep him fit, he'll, you know, he's a good striker and a great price. So that is giving me hope that if we can stay a Premier League team next season, hopefully the recruitment is sort of, you know, more sort of through him, through someone like him, you know, instead of this kind of, oh, I want this, or, you know, Marinakis Jr. Oh, look, I've followed so-and-so on Twitter, you know, who's not got a club. And yeah, you know, he's got 4 million followers. Let's get him.
I do have a little bit of a bugbear about this group thing, I have to admit. And I'm probably, again, everybody probably thinks I'm a negative misery, but I really don't like group club ownership anyway. I don't think you should own more than one football club, but that's because I'm a fan and I don't understand how you can really have a genuine reason for wanting to own multiple clubs. I don't like the hierarchy nature of things because I think it's disrespectful to the clubs that aren't at the top of that hierarchy. And I don't like the idea of having, much as I like what Tsourianos has done in the past, I don't like the idea of having one guy overseeing the recruitment of three clubs that are very different, in very different leagues, have different needs. And if one of them goes into a crisis, then they become the focus of everybody's attention while they resolve that crisis. And the other ones, you know, lose out because they haven't got that guy who's overseeing it, looking at them anymore. So I'd rather see a good, strong, expert Forest structure personally. But I realize again that I've got some very specific kind of things on my want list that aren't necessarily practical at the moment.
It's a start, though, isn't it? We, you know, it's a start moving towards something that's sort of, you know, oh, look, if you open this door, that's the recruitment department, no one else.
Just picking up on what Steve was saying about the sort of multi-club thing, I've done quite a lot of work on, for a project I've been working on the last few months. And the other thing is that it doesn't work a lot of the time. Like, there have been some kind of headline successes, like Hirona within the City Football Group.
Or but Brighton, got, I guess. They're...
Well, but Brighton, I suppose, is slightly different because it is a multi-club group, but it's a sort of, Brighton are kind of more or less standalone. They send a couple of players on loan to Saint-Gilloise, and so it's not the same kind of level as you know, City Football Group or what Chelsea are trying to do. But the clubs kind of down the food chain, they not only lose their identity, they become feeder clubs to the others. And, you know, I know this is a Forest podcast and, you know, Olympiacos, we're not likely to become a feeder club for Olympiacos, you know, at the moment anyway. So we are technically at the top of this tree. But for clubs like Strasbourg, who have been bought by, you know, by Chelsea recently, they're in a dreadful state, and Troyes in France as well, part of the City Football Group. They might be relegated. They were relegated from Ligue 1 last season. I think they might be relegated from Ligue 2 this season. So it's one of those things that's kind of good in theory because it's about sort of economies of scale, and you can, yeah, like with Tsourianos, you can use this guy to be the head of recruitment for the whole group, and that sort of streamlines things. But in practice, it often doesn't work. The reason Manchester City are the best, well, have been one of the best team in England, possibly Europe, is not because they're part of a multi club group. It's because they, you know, they've got the best manager and the best player. That sort of structure, I don't really see how it benefits anyone to the point where it's worth what everyone else loses. This has been a bugbear of mine for a little while, so I've gone off on a little bit of a not Forest related tangent, but yeah, it's pretty uncomfortable.
It's also vanity as well from owners.
Yeah,
a lot 100%. Of the time it's like, I want to buy more, you know, and then trying to figure out how they coexist is much later down the line.
All right, plenty more to come on the accounts and Forest financials, I'm sure. I would just like to give a shout out to the chap sat near me who, during the Forest and Magic on and off the pitch chant, kept caveating it with the notable exception of the accounts department. Which everybody around us enjoyed tremendously.
It doesn't scan brilliantly, does it?
No, it doesn't, but that almost made it funnier, I think. Yeah. Enjoyed it a lot. Enjoyed it a lot. Will he be going to Spurs on Sunday? That's what we're talking about next. Right, so Forest at Tottenham on Sunday. Spoiler, they take an early lead, but then concede in the second half and end up losing the game, because that's what tends to happen when you go to Tottenham these days. Nick, this is a weird one, isn't it? It's being played on Sunday night at 6 o'clock because Spurs couldn't get a safety certificate for the original Monday night fixture because of the transport system in this country being on the brink of collapse. Is that your understanding of it?
Yeah, kind of, pretty much. I mean, it is... The timing of it is very bad. It was, you know, people have known about these potential strikes, these train strikes, for a little while, and to kind of change the timing of the game so dramatically at such short notice wasn't ideal. But it's pretty chaotic getting away from Tottenham at the best of times. But if the train station that serves, you know, hundreds of thousands of people isn't open, then, you know, you can't really have a game on at that time. But yeah, the short version is that the infrastructure of the country is completely banjaxed, and this is why, on a personal level, I can no longer go to the game, because I had a ticket for this, and if it was on Monday, I would have been able to go, but it's on Sunday, so I can't. And that's, I think that's the real tragedy of this, really, the thing that everyone should be kind of should be worried about.
Absolutely. Arsh, I'm really looking forward to seeing the Spurs supporters' Nuno Tifo. Presumably he's going to pick the same team that he did on Tuesday night to start this game against his old club.
Yeah, I think the Tifo would probably just be one guy with his phone, just with an image of Nuno, someone who was like, oh, he was never given a chance. He was never given a chance.
Someone just holding up that one Manager of the Month award he got in August.
Yeah, I mean, that was the big positive out of last night, wasn't it? You know, the team, the front four especially, felt like, yeah, that's your strongest unit. And he himself has been going on about, you know, consistency. All right, Nuno, why don't you, you know, be consistent and pick the same team? Let's have that. But it should be a good game. I mean, the other thing that gave me heart was how we looked on the counter, because Fulham were quite aggressive. And that is us. That is our, you know, strength, to play on the counter. It has been since, you know, Steve Cooper was around as well in the Premier League. So hopefully we'll get loads of that, because, you know, Ange Ball and everything, you know, the kind of every buzzword, every buzz phrase he does, you know, inverted fullbacks, check. Build from the back, check. Press hard, check. They do all of that stuff. They do all of the cool stuff, you know, and they don't give you much time on the ball. So I'm definitely expecting like an 80-20 possession split, you know, if we're lucky, kind of thing. But our counterattacks, they are so strong, you know. So I'm hoping there's a bit of that. You know, and we can sort of, because they do look quite, I've watched Spurs quite a lot, and they look quite chaotic when they turn over the ball. Like, they really do, because you spend most of the game going like, oh man, Sarr, Bissouma, they are so good. Oh, they are so good. And then they'll give the ball away and they look absolutely atrocious and they're all over the place. And you're like, oh yeah, that's Bissouma and that's Sarr. Yeah, he's still young. So there is some of that, you know, and hopefully we can, you know, really sort of put them to the sword.
Yeah, Steve, I don't know about you, but I'm not a free hits guy. I think every game you've got to go and try and get something from. But given that our remaining away games after this are Everton, Sheffield United and Burnley, it would be an incredible bonus if we could take even one point back with us.
Yeah, it would. I mean, it's funny how one result kind of just changes your entire kind of mood and outlook on everything. And I don't want to get carried away, but thinking purely in terms of, are we going to stay up or not this year? That result last night has just completely kind of relaxed me in terms of, we've got plenty to kind of go at now. So in that sense, I kind of don't care too much about how we come out of this. Yeah, if we lose against Spurs, I'm not going to shed any tears. I would kind of expect us to lose against Spurs. And it would be nice to see a similar team going out and putting in a good performance, and what comes. But, you know, I still think, I've been saying beforehand, 30 points to stay up. Well, suddenly 5 points from what we've got left looks well within our capability. So I'm now quite relaxed about the notion of going to Spurs or hosting Man City and thinking, yeah, put out the team and give it your all. And we got a great result against City last year. Maybe we do the same again. Maybe we get something away at Spurs, but I'm not going to be panicking if we don't. Whereas if we'd lost last night, I'd have been thinking, who are we going to beat? You know, we've just had Palace and Fulham at home. These are the games we should be winning. we haven't managed to beat anybody, then how are we going to beat anybody kind of thing. And now I'm looking at the games and thinking, oh, well, we can win this one, we can win this one. And everything's changed overnight. So I don't like to make knee-jerk reactions, but I've absolutely made a knee-jerk reaction to last night.
Absolutely.
It's just so much fun.
We're in the territory now where it's all post kind of coital cigarettes, isn't it? It's time to, kick back and just put your scarf on and just... It was so erotic, the Fulham game. So, yeah. You know, let's enjoy it. Let's just enjoy it.
For those listening rather than watching on YouTube, Arsha literally has produced a scarf from somewhere and put it on.
Nick, not to dampen down all this positivity, but if I had to push you for a minute that Brennan Johnson will score in this game, which one would you go for?
Interesting. Depends whether he started for Spurs last night, didn't he? And he scored pretty early on. Probably, 23, I think. It's going to be, assuming he starts, but yeah, I'm going to say a pretty early dagger through the ribs.
And a very respectful hands up like this. Sorry, yeah. Celebration. Yeah. Type
he
thing.
Might what? Actually be injured. He came.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Didn't he?
Yesterday he had a knock, which, is kind of beautiful in some ways. Because
well, he came off early at the City Ground as well, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. So there was that. So he didn't quite get to sort of destroy us at the City Ground. And he might give us a bit of leeway for this game as well, because he really has started to find form. But yeah, I think he got a knock, so he's a doubt.
It's right. A bit like Anthony Gordon missing out last night for kicking the ball away and getting himself sent off.
Couldn't have happened to a nicer bloke, if you ask me. As well as Matt Sells played, I would still advocate maybe just putting Mark Crosley in goal for the admittedly unlikely eventuality that the game goes to penalties. But either way, let's hope that whoever starts between the posts, Forest can get something positive from the still only known as the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Nobody quite meeting Daniel Levy's price to get their name branded over that. All right, we're nearly done for today, but for an end bit, because we haven't really spoken about the sad passing of Larry Lloyd last week, one of our miracle men, I wondered who was the one player that you never got to see play for Forest that you wish you had. This is very unprofessional, but I'm going to go first here because I think I've got the one that everybody wants, really. But I can't tell you about it just on my own. Here's me speaking to my mum in the rain. All right, so it is 21:37. We are walking back to the Lady Bay area from the world-famous City Ground, having seen Forest beat Fulham by 3-1, as we've already discussed. What a glorious night it's been. The rain can't possibly dampen our moods. As we make our way back to the car, I'm with my illustrious mother. And for this feature, who's the Forest player you wish you'd seen but you never did? I'm going to ask her for a little help to tell me about John Robertson. What was it about John Robertson that was so good?
John Robertson could beat any defender down the wing and pass the ball across in such a precise way. He was fast. He was so accurate with his passes. He was just amazing.
And did you like him because he liked a fag and a drink as well?
Absolutely, yeah. He was your archetypal footballer of the 70s/80s. He was that sort of man.
And who does he remind you of in sort of modern football?
Trent Alexander-Arnold with his passes. He was like that, definitely.
So is he the best Forest player you've ever seen?
I would say so, yes.
And do you think he was Brian Clough's favourite player?
I don't know about that one. I don't know, because when I used to go, obviously, we're talking about the era of Larry Lloyd, Kenny Burns, Archie Gemmell played, Tony Woodcock. I don't know. I can't say if he was or not, really.
But John Robertson, the best player that I never saw for Forest.
Absolutely, yes. It's a shame you never got to see him play.
Thanks to Mum. Those contributions, very valuable. Nick, who have you got for me? I guess John Robertson was your number one pick.
Yeah, it's quite annoying that you've played the family card and dibsing that. I mean, you could pick any number of the European Cup winning teams, but I'm going to go sort of almost needlessly obtuse and say Grenville Morris, because he is remains Forest top scorer of all time, and no one's seen him play because he played for Forest in the early 1900s, between about 1900 and 1910 or something like that. And I mean, I am always just fascinated as to how good players actually were back then in the sort of what was still the early days of professional football. So I would really like to, if anyone is working on a time machine and they want to use it in one of the more wasteful ways possible, take me back to a Forest game in about 1905.
Yeah, do the same for Dick LaFlemme, I think, as well. Just asking what it was like walking around with that name. Arsha, was there anybody who stood out for you?
Yeah, I'm going to go with someone who I'm pretty sure all three of you have seen, Brian Roy. I never got to the City Ground to see Brian Roy. And by extension, Stan Collymore, because that was such a great partnership. So definitely a bit of Dutch guile. That would have been nice to see, especially in that resplendent shirt. I really hope that Forest bring back the black bars. How do you guys feel about that?
I have that with Roy 22 on the back.
Yeah, that was always a thing. I'd always see the kids in the playground. They'd always have Roy 22. And I always thought, oh, such a strange number. And then you'd get I've got his actual Panini sticker from back in the day on my laptop. So, you know, if ever I'm in a cafe, people will know who Brian Roy is. But definitely Brian Roy.
A couple of things about Brian Roy. First one is that I always enjoyed the story about how Frank Clark persuaded him and his wife to sign for Forest by telling them that it was just down the road from London. And also, I don't know if you've been following his career recently. Yeah. All I'll say is he apparently asked a friend of mine who's also a journalist if he could put him in touch with Matt Letizia. So
yeah, ask him for his views on stuff including the city of Nottingham. I think
this
is probably
what's wrong with the internet.
He was good though, and also he was taught English by one of Nick and I's old maths teachers.
Forgot about that. She used to claim that they were really good mates, didn't she?
Dr. O'Connor.
Dr. O'Connor.
Not sure she was an actual doctor. Never checked that. But anyway, Steve, is there anybody who you never saw play for Forest that you wish you had?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, along Nick's lines, it would have been great to see Sam Weller-Widdowson with his sawn-off cricket pads on, wouldn't it? I would have quite liked to see that. But the guy I'd really like to have seen was Ian Storey-Moore. He was the first guy that I interviewed for Bandy and Shinty, and he is just such a lovely bloke. And he's also the guy that John Robertson always says is the best player Forest ever had. So if Robbo's recommending him like that, then he's got to be a player to see, hasn't he? So I'd love to see Ian Storey-Moore play.
Specifically that FA Cup game against Everton in 67, was it? 68, around then?
Yeah. Yeah, but he still says it wasn't really about him. It was just, you know, he just happened to kind of score the goals.
to score the goals.
He's such a sort of modest guy. He really struggles to take the acclaim. He's just such a nice guy, but a fabulous footballer from what everybody who did see him, you know, recalls.
And Nick and I might occasionally bump into him should we be visiting our parents, because he owns the newsagents in Bingham, doesn't he? So maybe we can help him out with that. If you're after a greetings card, head to Bingham Precinct and put some money in Ian Storey-Moore's pocket. It's the least you can do, listener, as well as leaving us a nice review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your pods. We would appreciate that. Helps other Forest fans find the show as well as making us feel good. You can follow us on X at the Garibaldi G, on Instagram at the Garibaldi Gazette, same handle on YouTube, where you can watch the show if you so desire. We shall be back with another one next week. Until then, my thanks go to Steve, to Arsha, to Nick, and to you for joining us as well. Have a great weekend. Speak to you soon.